Na 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 na. All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you. We are back in studio for our second day. We've got JT filling in for Drew for the rest of this week. Drew's back next Monday. We are also back at camp tomorrow in St. Joe. The Chiefs are off today. No, nothing's going on in St. Joe today. You're not missing anything by not being up there. So we'll be there for a full show tomorrow. We'll have a member of the Chiefs join us exclusively on the show. So hope to see some of you guys up at Chiefs camp. Today, though, it is all about the deadline. A little bit later on this afternoon, we will find out what other moves go down. Obviously, last night, the big move in baseball was Eugenio Suarez going back to the Mariners after being traded from the Diamondbacks. And so we'll get into that because there's a couple teams in front of the Royals in the wild card standings that move their chips to the center of the table. That certainly is going to impact the divisional standings for some of those teams, but for the Royals is all about the wild card, obviously, and a team like the Mariners occupying that third and final wild card spot. We'll get to that. We're going to talk to Vern a little bit later on in the show as well, our Royals insider. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream will be up and running as well on Facebook, YouTube, X. Make sure you subscribe on Twitch and YouTube so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan.
Always love having you over on the chat. I try to keep up with everyone there and on the text line so we can try to connect with you, the fans, as much as we can. Look, we're going to talk deadline, obviously, here in a minute. I got to say, though, that game yesterday, I don't think I've ever seen a team in all the baseball games I've ever watched win a game that way. They had no offense. The first runner they had in scoring position was the one Major League Baseball set a rule for 2 years ago to gift them in scoring position. That was the game-winning run, and they used 9 pitchers in 10 shutout innings in order to get a 1-0 win against the Braves. I'm not saying that's the one that's going to make you feel good about the offense, but it's definitely still a win, and it counts the same.
Yeah, it was an impressive effort, no doubt.
Mostly it just speaks to where their bullpen is. And maybe we've undersold it all year because it might be one of the three best bullpens in the league. I'll talk to Vern, who certainly watches all the other teams even more than we do. But I mean, the way that they're performing right now, and this is going to impact the trade deadline in a minute, they go, as far as my comfort with a guy coming in the game, 5 or 6 deep. Well, we already got a trade.
That sounder, big trade.
That sounder today means a trade has gone down. All right, JT. Let us know. What's the latest trade?
So the trade is actually a closer. Mason Miller is on the move.
Ah, from the A's.
Okay. He was
headed to the Padres.
All right. There was a rumor late last night from, I think it was John Heyman, saying it was close, but not a done deal.
And they're not just getting Mason Miller. They're getting J.P. Sears as a starter as well. So,
Okay.
There has not been a...
Ooh, here's told. The... I see the details.
Okay, I haven't seen the details yet.
The A's are getting... one of the top shortstop prospects, Dusty's over there. I know he knows this name as well. DeVries, the number 3 overall prospect in all of baseball, the shortstop for the Padres, now going to be part of the Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas A's organization.
Who the hell knows what their team name is?
Big trade, no doubt. Obviously, the Padres in the NL West trying to keep up, stay ahead of the Giants, trying to catch the Dodgers, trying to occupy a wild card spot. Mason Miller was the hot name a year ago. Like he came on the scene. I think he was a rookie last year, if I'm not mistaken. Mason Miller was like the closer in baseball a year ago. This year he's been fine. He just hasn't had the pub that he was getting a year ago. And that's a big trade, and that's a big time prospect on the move. The number 3 prospect at all of baseball, not just with the Padres organization, in all of baseball. Think about the A's for a second, real quick. I don't want to go too far deep into this because this doesn't impact
Nick Kurtz and now
Nick Kurtz. Jacob Wilson and DeVries, DeVries, I don't know.
I can't remember.
I'll go with DeVry University, Mr. DeVry.
That doesn't even exist anymore.
Did they get shut down?
Go to Centric for your IT.
Did
needs.
They get shut down?
I don't know.
DeVry. Anyway, I have no idea. It's interesting because Jacob Wilson plays shortstop, though. So I wonder if who can play a different spot in that that infield, though. Bunch of young studs in the infield there for.
Yeah, they're making a lot of moves. Look, J.P. Sears is a 29-year-old starter with a 4.95 ERA. So essentially, they're making this for a Michael Lorenzen-type starter and obviously one of the best closers in baseball. Gold, if this is the current going rate of a reliever, you got to trade. You got to trade one
Carlos.
Of the relievers. I don't want to, like, I understand that I've, like, been in both camps and it's difficult to decide which way the Royals are going. And once they decided they were kind of like in it to win it this year and giving Seth Lugo a contract, I get it. But you can buy and sell. And if this is the going rate, and this isn't the only deal, relievers are going for not just a premium, an incredible premium in this year's MLB trade deadline. Last year, you got Lucas Hrsek for nothing. So, like, if the year dictates that relievers are going for this price, and you go five or six relievers deep that I feel good about, like, genuinely, I'm fine when Steven Cruz comes out, and Estevez, and Hrsek. And at this point, Schreiber, maybe Hunter Harvey. There's like, they've got so many names right now that I'm comfortable pitching in relief for them. Daniel Lynch just started a rehab assignment. He had been pretty good out of the bullpen as well. I think you have to, if you're the Royals right now, shop Carlos Estevez. Shop Steven Cruz. Shop one of your bigger relief pitch names if you can. Look, you don't want to trade Lucas Hrsek because you got five more years of control. Whatever. But if this is the going rate, and yes, your system is where it is, man, you ought to be making a move.
So the reliever market is wild. It is a market right now that is bringing back an immense amount of talent in return. And that's noted by this latest trade with the number three overall prospect in baseball. Now, Mason Miller also has plenty of years control. So I want to be clear, like, it's not the same as like the Royals would not get the same haul for Carlos as
relievers are getting good return.
It's a very impressive market, but like, this is not the trade that just went down is not like what you're getting back for somebody like Carlos. I am with you, though. If you believe Hunter Harvey, let's say, can stay healthy the rest of the year, you feel great about Hrsek, you feel really good about Steven Cruz, then that would be the name you'd be interested in actually moving based off of what you've seen in the market. The only thing is how they have acted by extending Seth Lugo and to this point only made a couple additions and not really sold anybody. Are they willing to make that move while also saying that they're in it for this year? Because my guess would be if you're trading somebody like Carlos, you are probably getting prospects, not big league talent back. And so, and I understand that's intriguing too, but that's good for the future. That would also, though, be sending like a mixed message for 25. You can't, you know, I don't hate it because if it means you get prospects that then help you go and fix the outfield in the offseason in addition to the prospects you have, I'm all about that. But can you say that you are helping your team in 25 when you do that? And there's a lot of you listening that will say you don't care about 25 anymore. And I get that.
But
organization has made it seem like they still care and believe in 25. And so it'd be going against what they have done to this point. But I am with you. I'm intrigued by it because the returns for some of these relievers have been unbelievable.
Maybe you can do both. Maybe you can trade a different prospect in your system for an outfielder, for a fifth starter, for the things that do it. But like right now, the going rate for relievers is so high.
A number three prospect in all of baseball for a closer.
I don't know how you wouldn't kick it around. Like, are you telling me right now for Lucas Hrsek and Michael Lorenzen? And if Lorenzen was healthy, that's essentially the trade they just made. Now, Mason Miller is a little more proven. So maybe it's the 10th best prospect in all of baseball. But if you're telling me Lucas Hrsek and Michael Lorenzen is available for the 10th best prospect in the entire sport, and that prospect is somewhere at AA or higher, well, then, yeah, I'd be interested.
Now, because of this, you look at, real quick, the Padres and the trade that they just made where they had Mason Miller going to their organization. They're sending out their top prospect in all baseball. Buster Olney just tweeted out, Robert Suarez and Dylan Cease are likely to be on the move now that they have landed Mason Miller, J.P. Sears. So because right this second, they have Mason Miller and Suarez, who's one of the best closers. So you don't need both of them. So it's kind of interesting. Now, Miller has more control than Suarez, I believe. But so they're going to trade for a closer and starting pitcher. And the report is that they're going to then trade Dylan Cease out and Suarez perhaps out. So that's kind of an interesting move for the Padres and how they're operating.
Now I'm just looking at outfielders who are like in AAA. Just about ready to come up, you know? That way you could figure out which way it would go. But no,
realistically, what do I think the Royals are doing today? I think, as we've been saying for a week, we've said this for the last week, I believe they will go and trade for a veteran pitcher to fill out the rotation. Find their Michael Lorenzen trade from a year ago. Can they replicate that? Who is that? Is it, you know, there's a couple names that have already gone off the board, but somebody that probably is a rental, yes, but he's probably 33 or older. He's not going to cost much. His ERA is probably in the fours, right? He's going to come in and be your fifth starter to fill out a rotation that right now only has a healthy Noah Cameron, Michael Wacha, and Seth Lugo. That's it.
I will say, I felt like a little more pressure. Like, if I were the Royals and I woke up this morning, let's just say, you know, JJ was like, I'm going to tuck myself in nice and early tonight before a big trade deadline day tomorrow. And I woke up and I saw the moves the Red Sox made, the team who is two teams ahead of you in the wild card spot, and the Eugenio Suarez trade that the Seattle Mariners made at midnight last night. Those are the two teams, not kidding, directly above you in the wild card standings right now. Them, the Texas Rangers, and a half game up on you, the Cleveland Guardians, who have mailed it in. So take them out of your equation for a minute. Cleveland selling, Twins are selling, you're buying. But the two teams who hold a spot ahead of you,
Mariners, third
both
wild card spot,
made big moves yesterday. So there is part of me that says, hey, if you decided on Lugo and you're making a move, do something. Don't just sit on your hands now. And I was team trade for a long time, and I'm still saying I'd maybe move a reliever. But this might be move a reliever, but bring in a starter. Move a reliever, but bring in an outfielder. And I don't.
Welcome in to the Chiefs.
My goodness. If you watch the video stream, I just jumped. That was so loud in my ear. What are we? What is that? Holy cow.
That threw me off, JT.
Woo. Holy cow.
Just click on that. I had hit
ask
insert.
Cody. I mean, I just.
Yeah, it caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting
it. Well,
it
was
sure.
Mid convo.
But so, like, I do think that there are players worth targeting, but I don't think you can do nothing now. You can't tell me because they made a slight commitment to 2025. Gold, you and I can both think that they're not making the playoffs. But implied odds and fan graphs and all these other places would tell you there's a 15%, 20% chance the team makes the postseason. And you've committed to Lugo, which means you've committed to this year. You've brought in Grichik, which means you've committed something to this year.
Yeah.
Well, then you can't just sit on your hands today. I don't think that we can get to 5 o'clock and they've done nothing.
No, there will be a move or two today. And I really think the starting pitching is the avenue that they're going to have to go with finding a veteran. There is a report from Ken Rosenthal we saw this morning that the Rangers are at least looking at Hunter Harvey. What's interesting about him, we all know the Royals traded for Hunter Harvey from the Nationals last year. He got hurt very quickly. This year, got hurt. He's finally back. I think he's pitched, three times maybe since he's been back from injury twice. And so, and he doesn't have any control. So, I mean, this is it for him. You're not getting this haul, but maybe it's a better haul than we think because of where the reliever market is at. You're not getting the haul that a closer would get. You're not getting the haul that a guy with control would get, like Mason Miller or anybody like that by any means. But could you get something? Could you trade, honestly, could you trade a Hunter Harvey and get that fifth starter back, that veteran fifth starter? And that way you're not giving up even a prospect. I don't know, but the Rangers reportedly are talking to the Royals about Hunter Harvey. For a guy that you really haven't had this year anyway, that maybe is the more realistic trade than you and I discussing because the reliever market, they actually move a Carlos or a Cruz.
I would just wake up and I would be, and we'll ask JJ in a couple weeks, I would be so tempted, Gold, if I were JJ, just knowing what relievers are getting. But yeah, Hunter Harvey's an interesting one because I'll be honest, this is even the one where if it were a prospect, if they told me, we'll give you our 12th ranked prospect in the whatever, the red system, and you, not the Reds, they're not going to buy, but you get the point. And because of that, you give us Hunter Harvey, a guy who essentially just hasn't existed on this team. Sure. I mean, what is Hunter Harvey? Like, he hasn't pitched. He's been on this team for a year and a half. He hasn't pitched. So if he's just not on this team now, did anything fundamentally change? I can't say that it did, unless Hunter Harvey's getting ready to be like gangbusters. I will say this, though, is that if you, the Royals, are big believers in Hunter Harvey still, as in the advanced metrics that only you have on the inside of your system, the scouting reports you've seen from him doing these rehab things or an Arizona Gold, they know what Hunter Harvey's stuff looks like. If you're high on Hunter Harvey, that makes the first part of what we discussed easier. Do you know what I'm saying?
Cody, like, if they trade Hunter Harvey, trade that one, nobody should care if they trade Hunter Harvey. I think people
can
push.
If you love him internally, it's easier to trade one of the other relievers I was talking about because you're only going to get so much for Hunter Harvey.
Sure, but he's gone in 3 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and we're not talking about a starting pitcher. I mean, if you told me that they didn't want to trade Carlos and they don't want to trade Urseg, nor should they, on Urseg at least, then Hunter Harvey, if I can get back something, that's not a move that I mean, yes, it helps your bullpen having him, but he's not somebody that's been part of this season for the most part. Anyway, yeah.
I just wanted to chime in without alarming all of you.
I mean, people were texting that you gave everybody a heart attack. Thank you.
Yeah.
My goodness.
It was also just like on volume 4,000.
Yeah. The A's are not just getting the shortstop, DeVries. They're also getting three pitchers from the Padres as well. So it's a four-player trade. I mean, the Padres gave up four total players for two pitchers, in a sense.
Yeah, and then the thought is they're going to get some back, though, because now it looks like they're going to trade Suarez and Dylan Cease. And so they'll get some of them back. But, yeah, that's a hell of a trade.
Look, I wonder whether or not I think it's a very interesting trade deadline. I'm not saying they're going to make some big move like what we just saw with them, or they were going to go get Eugenio Suarez like we just saw with Seattle. But they are in an interesting position where if they want to trade relievers, they can. If they want to trade for a starter, it makes sense. If they wanted to go big and trade some of their prospects for a controllable outfielder for the future, they can. I'm curious to see what they do because there's the action kicked up starting like 10 o'clock last night when it seems like the Red Sox made a bevy of moves all the way up until now where we've seen a lot of action here in baseball.
We're inside 24 hours. That's what, last night, obviously, we were inside 24 hours. For the deadline. So as we all know, the cliche deadline spur action, and now we're in it. And there will be trades, as we all know, that get done literally in the final minute before the deadline. And sometimes we find out 20 minutes after the deadline that somebody got moved. We also know the Royals, who are heading to Toronto, are not leaving Kansas City until the deadline is passed because, I mean, it kind of tells us they think there's a chance there's some action happening, and you don't want someone on an international flight finding out they got traded or landing in Canada and then have to...
Here's your passport back so we can get you back.
But it is... The trade that went down is rare. The prospect that got moved, he's number three in baseball. He's the highest-ranked prospect to get traded at the deadline since Eloy Jimenez back in 2017 when he was the fifth prospect in baseball. So normally, teams trade prospects. That's how baseball works. You don't normally see top three, top five prospects in all of baseball get moved at the deadline.
Does this hurt his market being an A?
Are you better if you're a top prospect? He's going to be a Las Vegas guy in a couple years.
Yeah.
That'll be good for him.
Yeah, that's true, maybe.
And right now, Nick Kurtz and Jacob Wilson card market is through the roof. So, especially Nick Kurtz after
they got a lot of
four home run day. So,
very good.
We'll keep an eye on it. JT will alert us without giving us a heart attack throughout the show today when there is a trade.
Hey,
I'm one for two. We will get to that. Don't forget, though, when we're back up at training camp tomorrow, our training camp coverage is going to be brought to you by Break Time, Missouri's homegrown convenience stores. Download their mobile app and find a location near you. Let's pivot to the NFL for a little bit.
Speaking of trades, Bill Barnwell had a little fun over at ESPN.com that I thought was worthy of a conversation on this show. He did his NFL trade tiers of every team's players that he deemed worth at least a first round pick if you traded him off the squad. And you're like, well, why is this interesting? You're like, okay, so first off, it'd be like, he thinks Trent McDuffie'd be worth a first round pick and more, right? So at least one first round pick plus additional stuff. He believes that Xavier Worthy and Creed Humphrey and George Karloftis would also dictate a first round pick if they were to just be moved for whatever reason. You're like, they're not going to trade these guys. So you're like, okay, just good to know. Chris Jones just outside that mark, he thinks, in maybe the second round category. And Trey Smith out of that category because he's paid too much. And you're like, okay, all those guys sound like the guys. I don't think there's anybody missing, right, who would warrant a first-round pick, except Patrick Mahomes, of course. Okay. In his article, this is what he said about if the Chiefs traded Patrick Mahomes, what it would take to acquire him. He said that the Chiefs would acquire at least seven first-round picks. And I was trying to think for just a minute.
Still wouldn't do it.
Never.
No.
Not even for a second. But what I liked about it was, is there any scenario in which it would make sense if the team with the number one overall pick in a year in which it felt like a sure thing at number one, you still couldn't do it, could you? Seven first-round picks? I honestly don't think that that's enough. You know, I know it's not enough because they wouldn't do it. Would 20 do it? Like, is there a number of first-round picks the Chiefs would even consider? They would even take a call?
It'd have to be like 10.
North of 10. Because you know you're going to be picking 25th or later, right? All those first-round picks aren't good first-round picks. They're all picking after 25 or whatever. They'd have to, one of the picks they trade you would have to be actively the number one overall pick. Otherwise, what would you do it for?
The only way you entertain this is when he's like 37 or 38 years old. That's the only way you would ever entertain it.
I just like the
idea. He'd have to be 37 or 38.
Seven first-round picks. That was higher, by the way, than any other player he had mentioned this entire thing.
Don't tell Ryan Clark that, who thinks Joe Burrow is the best quarterback in football, and it's not even close, he said. Oh, what a freaking ridiculous take that was.
We can get to that in just a minute. Madden did put out their rankings, though, and they have Joe Burrow ahead of Patrick Mahomes. They have Lamar Jackson,
video
Josh
game
Allen,
ones. The video game ones won't upset me as much.
No, mostly because they are based in what you are actively doing. So, like, they, you know, they base it a little bit on the idea of what your team or what your player did last year. So, like, I think that part of it kind of matters a little bit, I guess.
Some of the text line said they would take Josh Allen for Mahomes and 3 first-round picks coming back.
Oh, man. Oh, man. 3 first-round picks and Josh Allen? No.
The reason why the answer is also no at this point in time.
So what, he could just lose to Patrick Mahomes and the Bills?
The answer is no for that. Not only is it just the pure football reason, but at this point in time, you as a Chiefs fan, there's also the tie to the city and the connection. You're just not giving up on that player at this point. Like, just all the attachment and memory part of it on top of the football part of it. You're not moving on. That's also part of the equation.
I think I just, what I like about it is just like, I can't even imagine a scenario in which it would be worth it. You're right. He'd have to be 38 years old. And even then, Gold, if he was at like 5 Super Bowls and 38 years old, I'm like, don't do it. Forget the seven first round picks. I don't care about the future.
No, if he was 38 years, if he was 38
years, this is the only guy I want to care about in Chiefs history.
If he was 38 years old and you could get 5 or 7 first-round picks as an organization, that's a deal you would have to do.
What's crazy is like some of these other players that they're like aren't worth a first round pick. Part of the reason is because, or you know, like close to a first round pick, is because they don't think, you know, like you're stuck in a situation where like the contract makes it prohibitive, right? Someone's like, you know, maybe I don't think anybody would give up a first round pick for Trey Smith before, but they're certainly not going to do it if he's making $100 million, right? Essentially, I will say they even had 2 first-round picks for Trevor Lawrence, and I thought, no way.
No. Cleveland would give up 2 first-round picks right
for
now.
For Trevor Lawrence?
Cleveland would. Cody, they gave Deshaun Watson
a first-round picks for Trevor Lawrence?
Cody, they gave Deshaun Watson a fully guaranteed contract. Yes, the Browns would give up 2 first-round picks if you told them they could have their starting quarterback for X amount of years.
Do you think the Saints would do that?
Yes.
I think the Saints would.
Kellen Moore would take Trevor Lawrence in a heartbeat. Yes.
Am I wrong here? 2 first-rounders for Trevor Lawrence? Ugh.
Well, okay, you just got to think about, do you think there's going to be a quarterback that you think and trust coming out of the draft in the next 2 years that you would think, okay, hey, he's going to be better than Trevor Lawrence?
Well, and if I got to trade up, I pretty much have to give up 2 first-round picks anyway, so like I understand that
part
of
it. The Saints could end up being the worst team in football.
Yeah, I would take the chance I could get better than Trevor Lawrence.
The Saints could end up being the worst team in football this year, so the argument there is, yeah, what you're saying, JT, is that they might be the worst team, they might have the 1 overall pick, and if you actually believe Arch Manning's the real deal and you actually believe he's leaving college after this year, then they say, well, we'd rather just not spend any picks and just get him at number one. And also a Manning going to New Orleans. Yeah, we've never seen that before. That's like that's a scenario that I think the NFL almost wants at this point.
They want Arch Manning to get picked 12th overall to the Saints.
Not 12th overall. I think they're going to be the number 1 overall pick, but they could be one of the worst teams in football this year. The Saints?
I mean, yeah, Tyler Shuck. And
they might. I mean,
they're definitely picking top 7.
Who do you think are bottom three? I mean, going into the season, Cleveland, New Orleans. And who would you say is the I mean, Tennessee's tricky. Maybe they have something. I don't know.
Without knowing what Cam Ward's going
to
do,
think.
I wouldn't put them in the list because I think they got a better chance of being good.
The Giants will win enough games to be outside the top three. I think the Giants.
Russell Wilson's going to.
They'll win 6 games. That gets you outside the top three. It should. To be top three, you got to be like anywhere from a 1 to 4 win team usually, right? I guess I'd have to look at the records this past year. Let me go.
Panthers.
See, I think they'll be good enough that they're not a top three pick, and they're not taking a quarterback.
I think that's actually the only other answer besides Tennessee. Tennessee's problem is that they won't win many games because their defense stink and their offensive weapons stink. So even if Cam Ward's good, it might be like one of those rookie years at a quarterbacks where you're like, wow, they played really what a nice effort from Cam Ward this year, but it didn't mean anything because the team is absolutely garbage. Like the Panthers or the Titans is probably the answer.
I mean, honestly, last year the Raiders and Patriots won
Colts.
4 games. The Browns won 3.
Colts are starting
Titans
Daniel Jones. I'm supposed to believe in them.
Giants won 3 last year. They'll win more than that. Bears won 5. Yeah, I mean, I think the Saints and Cleveland are the obvious bottom three teams in football.
Yeah.
Someone said that, don't forget the Jets.
And Colts.
I don't know what to make about the Jets. I don't know. I don't think they're going to win a bunch of games, but I also don't think they're
winning 3 games.
I like
their offensive weapons, and I like parts of their defensive line. But they're overall not a good team. They're probably going to be one of the 5 worst teams in the league, right? I mean, the thing about the Giants and picking them in that is that they do have to take on the defending Super Bowl champs, an up-and-coming Washington Commanders team, and a Dallas team that should have their starting quarterback the entire year.
Yeah, the Giants
so
and
the Giants
Saints
are going to get beat up on their own division.
Giants and Saints do play each other this year, too.
The Saints are in the worst division in football, typically. So at the very least, maybe they get like a jokey win from the Panthers or Falcons, depending on if Penix is any good. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. If Penix is no good, then you want to talk about how fast it could go south for the Atlanta Falcons?
No doubt.
Like, it's not like they don't have like a murderer's row roster. Penix is no good. I mean, they could slip pretty quick there into that bottom tier of NFL teams. So I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
All right, coming up next, we'll get to comments from Ryan Clark, and one game is now officially sold out in September. All right, just getting started here on a Thursday, keeping an eye on the MLB trade deadline. The biggest trade of the day just happened at the beginning of our show. If you're just joining us for the first time on a Thursday, the Padres sending their top prospect and the number three prospect in all of baseball to the A's for Mason Miller and J.P. Sears, but Mason Miller, the headliner, the closer for the A's, goes over to the Padres. A lot of people believe that is setting up a move for later today when the Padres are trying to trade for either Jaron Duran from the Red Sox or Stephen Kwan with the Guardians. So that's one thing to watch. We'll also see if the Royals are willing to move one of their relievers given the market. And there's a report from Ken Rosenthal that Hunter Harvey is intrigued by Hunter Harvey. And maybe that is a move that we see happen later on.
Are they capable of trading with a team that is not the Texas Rangers?
It works out pretty well for them.
No, honestly, I'm not here to complain. Michael Lorenzen has been well worth Walter Pennington, and certainly I don't think they'd go back and keep Aroldis Chapman instead of having Cole Reagans. Just feels like a team they keep trading with.
So today's all about the trade deadline. I understand it's the month of July, and people are trying to find content, and you know, on the national scale, you're trying to go viral and all that. Ryan Clark, who I actually really, really like, I think he's a very good analyst. I think his segments that he does with Scott Van Pelt after Monday Night Football are like awesome. I love listening and watching. He's way off base on this take, and I don't know, honestly, I don't know how you, it's not even just saying someone's better than somebody, it's the fact that you say it's not even close. This was what Ryan Clark had to say on ESPN the other day.
Let's just think about the seasons Joe Burrow has actually finished. In two of those seasons, you go to the AFC championships, and one of those seasons, you advance. And then you look at last year, and he's the best quarterback in the world, and it's not a conversation. I was talking this offseason to a lot of defensive coaches, and I was talking to a defensive coach, and he talked to me about Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. And he says to me, he's like, those dudes just know how to make something out of nothing. But the reason he thought Joe Burrow was the best was, he said, but Joe Burrow never misses the something. There's something to be said for a dude that knows how to put the football where it's supposed to go.
That was Ryan Clark.
Not even close.
That's the part, I guess, that irritated me the most. Like, Joe Burrow's awesome, right? Joe Burrow's a great quarterback. I think we've discussed this plenty on the show. He is easily in the top five. I actually have him number three on my quarterback
list.
I
have him four, yeah. But it's not a disrespectful
Joe Burrow's great, but like to say he's the best and it's not even close. How can you say it's not even? There's only one quarterback that you can even argue it's not even close. And some people will disagree with it, but at least you would understand. If I told you Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league and it's not even close, people will take issue, but that's the only guy
you can finish
without me saying, whoa, 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 whoa. How can you say it's Joe Burrow, it's not even close? Because if I'm someone that believes Josh Allen is the best quarterback or second best quarterback in football, and I'm in Buffalo or wherever, I would be irritated by that statement. What do you mean it's not even close that Josh Allen's not close to Joe Burrow? What do you mean it's not close that Lamar Jackson's not close to Joe Burrow? That's crazy. I love at the very beginning of the clip is my favorite part.
Let's just think about the seasons Joe Burrow has actually finished.
Do you understand the problem with that? Oh, let's eliminate the fact that he might not be available very often and hasn't made the playoffs. Ignore that, guys, but he's the best and it's not even close.
If you forget about all the hot dog derby races I've lost, Gold, I'm actually technically undefeated.
Just like this.
If you look at it that perspective, look, think about the seasons he's actually finished is a wild way to preface he's the best quarterback. This is where Ryan Clark should learn when you're trying to like make this argument, but you're trying to win it, the argument is always the most talented, you know, the most pure passer, the most accurate, the smartest. Choose a category you think you can actually win the argument with. Not the best. The best quarterback, without question, the NFL, cannot miss the playoffs 2 years in a row, and like 70% of the time he's been in the NFL. Like, that just can't be the case. The man's been to a Super Bowl. I'll give him that. And I still think that we make way too big a deal of that versus Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Because he won one more game once. That is not a bigger deal than missing the postseason. That entire time when Joe Burrow won that one additional game in the playoffs one time, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen kept winning their division and going to the playoffs and getting to AFC title games while Joe Burrow's ass was on the couch. And I think that this is like one of those, like, again, this makes it come off like I think Joe Burrow isn't good. That's not it at all. He's an incredibly good quarterback. If I couldn't have Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, he'd be the quarterback I'd want the most. Okay? He's just not definitively better than Patrick Mahomes. Honestly, I just think that this might be they're coming off the major Super Bowl loss. He's coming off his worst statistical season. So the Patrick Mahomes disrespect level will probably be at its highest point we've ever seen. And that's going to be hard to swallow. He's a 95, which is the fourth best quarterback in Madden.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan Clark is saying he's Joe Burrow's definitively the best quarterback in the league. People are going to this is going to be the worst. And no one's going to say he's a bad quarterback, but this is going to be the lowest level of respect he's been given in his entire NFL career. But then you just get the occasional ones that are so far out. You're like, come on.
No, I'll say this for Mahomes and for Chiefs fans that are annoyed by this kind of stuff, kind of what you're saying, Cody. If Mahomes goes out there this year and doesn't have a better year than he had last year, then there will be, I won't say every single list, there will be a majority of the lists out there and commentators that will no longer have him listed as the best quarterback in football. We're annoyed now because it's only happened after one season in which he wasn't quite as good, yet won 15 games and went to the freaking Super Bowl. But if they are an earlier exit for the first time in his career, they don't make it to an AFC title game, and his numbers are clearly behind Burrow or Lamar or Allen, right? Let's say that happens this year. I don't think it will, but let's say it does. It'll be an offseason next year, definitively, where everybody is saying Josh Allen or whoever of the group, by the way, gets the Super Bowl out of the AFC that's not Mahomes. Let's say it's Burrow, Lamar, or Allen. If one of those three get to a Super Bowl this year and Mahomes doesn't have a better statistical season, everybody is going to move whoever that quarterback is, move that quarterback to number one. And it'll be very, very clear that that's who everybody is saying is the best quarterback in football. So just be ready for that if that actually happens. But the beginning part is why I can still laugh at Ryan Clark, even though I think generally speaking, he's pretty good. When you have to say, well, ignore the years where he doesn't play, ignore the years he didn't make the playoffs. Let's just talk about the years where he was really good. Okay, let's do the same thing for Mahomes. Let's ignore the stats last year. And how about we look at all the other years and the five Super Bowl trips and the fact that he's won three rings, the fact that he's 4-0 against Josh Allen. If we can ignore the not so great years for Burrow where he's not available, then why the hell are we focusing on one year for Mahomes?
Yeah, and his bad statistical year still saw him playing in the Super Bowl last year. And I'll pull up the stat if everybody wants it. I think people in Kansas City don't need it. They talk about the surrounding characters, like what Spags has done on defense and all this stuff. They talk about it like it's the Patriots run, and it's not. Patrick Mahomes has had a singular top 10 defense in his Super Bowl attending years. One. Tom Brady had it, and this is not a joke, 7 or 8 times. He was in the Super Bowl. He had a top 10 defense in the NFL, top 5 defense in the NFL. So it's not the same. It's not, I think the defense has been a big contributor to their success, but it's not dragging him in and along for the ride. Like Mahomes has nothing to do with this. And they try to make it seem like they did with Brady for a while too, because Brady deserves more credit than he did too. But Brady, part of the reason he got to play in 10 Super Bowls is because he consistently had the best defensive mind in NFL history, but also top 5 defenses were a staple of Tom Brady's runs to the Super Bowl. They're not a staple of Patrick Mahomes' runs to the Super Bowl. And it's pretending like 2 years ago, he didn't lead the league in passing yardage and passing touchdowns. Like, those just don't exist. And instead, he's just 26 touchdowns, 11 picks, and 4,000 yards. Which, by the way, which is so funny about this, how many teams would sign up for that statistical year out of their quarterback this year? Like, 20? 26 touchdowns, 11 picks, and 4,000 yards. About 20 teams in the league would sign up for that year this right now. So his down year is better than 2/3 the league. I think it'd be a lot worse.
And Joe Burrow this year, because of who he is as a quarterback and having T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase and what I think will be a crappy defense again, he's going to be playing from behind. He's not going to get by with winning, but with 21 points. He's going to have to score in the 30s. I bet you his numbers are going to be crazy good again. I don't deny, like, if I had to bet, my guess is, yeah, Joe Burrow's probably throwing more touchdown passes than Mahomes this year.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, like, I feel pretty confident saying that.
I'm also pretty confident saying Mahomes' team will win more
games. But that's not the end-all, be-all of the pure touchdown number, especially if we know what Cincinnati was last year. So Drew's not here today. I'm surprised, like, we're going to find out he was listening. He's going to call in or something like that.
You think he's going to come
enjoying the, hopefully he's enjoying the beach. But
I hope he's not thinking about Joe Burrow's. If he tweets about Joe Burrow's Madden rating in the from the beach, he's just not enjoying his vacation enough.
Yeah.
I try to set my phone down.
I think he's stayed off for the most part. I saw his.
I saw him post a couple of beach photos.
His Instagram story last night. He was taking a walk on the beach or whatever. I saw that.
Very
so.
Meta.
Yeah.
It was just like his feet in the sand, or
no,
what?
No. Like a picture of the sky. Oh. With a song playing
just
in the background
on a beach walk.
Yeah, with
he's
the
very,
music.
He's
with
very
music.
Deep when he wants to be.
Yeah,
Drew. You'd think he got high more based on. The way like he posts sometimes. You'd think that it would just be like.
I think he said I think he's starting to do more like meditation stuff.
I think he posts a little bit like a person who's been like smoking a bowl for like half the afternoon. That's like, and then
sometimes.
Then he posts.
Some of the posts are, I think he's just getting into the, like more meditation and, you know. More, I don't know if spiritual is the right word, but you know,
it could be spiritual. Yeah, it doesn't have to be religious.
Right.
Spiritual.
I think that's his thing.
Introspective.
Right now.
Yeah. He's on a journey.
We'll find out when he comes back next week if anybody stole his family's spot on the beach or not. That was a big issue last year.
Very curious. Right.
Let's pivot a little bit to something that's going to take place in September in Colombia, and it's obviously the return. I know they're not calling it the border war, but it's the damn border war, okay? Kansas and Missouri are playing football again. It'll be in Colombia in September, and it was officially announced. We didn't get to this yesterday, but it's sold out, and as it should be, and as it always was going to be. And I told you, I think when we get to that weekend, I'll be amped for it. Right now, this far out, like the countdown is not on for me. Okay. There's a bunch of things in between. We've got a Royals team that's still trying to sneak in to the true wild card picture. The Chiefs are at training camp. It's right around the corner. We got a lot of stuff going
got
on.
A football game tonight.
We do have football tonight, baby. Yes, it is back.
Seriously watching.
Yes, it'll be on TV. I'll have a bet on the game as well. It's football. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame game later. I don't care if it's third stringers and second stringers, but, the rivalry with KUNMU, I'll be pumped when we get there. In fact, that Saturday that it happens, I think you and I are in Vegas. You're flying back, but I'll be in Vegas still. So I'm not going to be in Columbia for
fantasy football draft.
Maybe if I was going, I'd be even more amped. I'll get excited when we get there, but I'm glad to see it sold out, and it should be. There's no reason for it not to be a sellout.
Look, I was waiting. So the official announcement, I'm not surprised it's a sellout. Missouri sells out most of their games. And, you know, a game against Kansas, a rival from... you know, age past, mm-hmm. certainly do it. I was just trying to decide, like, is there a universe in which this rivalry ever has the same feeling again? And I could only come up with one scenario in which I think it could get close, Cold,
okay.
and not even quite the same. Not that KUMU, number two and number three in the country, or whatever, they were right in that range. 2-4, 2-3, 1-3. Arrowhead College Game Day. I remember being at a house party with like 30 people, and everyone was... fully invested in the game. Yep. That was the because Kansas hadn't been good in so long, and they were good, and they were both good, and it mattered. Like, for it to get anywhere close to that level, it will require them facing off later in the year for either a college football playoff spot or facing off in the college football playoff.
Oh, in the playoff would be nuts.
If you got KU and MU in a good year together, in a college football playoff, in a 16-team format where there's buys, where there's some version of that, or maybe a 12 where there are buys, and they got an early round matchup against each other, then I think you can get the juice back.
A campus site game.
That's what it would genuinely take for the MU-KU rivalry in football to feel the same again. And basketball, too, for that matter. I think it would take them facing off in an NCAA tournament. Yeah. They don't play enough league games. They don't play enough against each other. It just doesn't have the same energy. It's not one at their building, one at our building, back and forth, twice a year. It would take them facing off in a postseason tournament, I think, to feel that, like,
maybe
your true hatred of the school.
Maybe. I don't think you can ever replicate what you had in conference play, replicate what you had where you were playing every single year nonstop before conference realignment took place. All that, I don't think you can bring it back to that exact level, unfortunately. But yes, I mean, this September, it's going to be incredible. I think in Colombia, expectations for both teams, obviously, going in. And long term, yeah, if they ever were both at their highest points at the same time in a college football playoff on an on-campus site opening round game, whether it's in Lawrence or Columbia, would be...
That would do it.
Off the charts. But go back to the BCS days when everybody thought at the time that game was going to decide who was going to the BCS bowl game. And obviously Kansas lost and still went to the Orange Bowl. Still love that.
And won the Orange Bowl game.
They did against Vatek. So
the last big win in Kansas football history. Not the last big win. They've had other...
Well, it's just the biggest win in Kansas football history. So, I mean, yes.
Some down years after that. And now they're decent again.
But someone says Mizzou is going to smash KU. Of course, you're not hyped. I'm not so sure about that. I think it's going to be a pretty competitive game.
But here's the thing.
Who's Mizzou's quarterback? Let me know when they figure out their quarterback situation.
This is the part that's the problem. Missouri beat Kansas in basketball. And Gold, it did not ruin your week, month, year.
Well, it's a game of December. It just doesn't mean anything.
But even if it's in December, it used to mean something, though. A December basketball game between MU and KU in which MU beat Kansas meant something at a time. There was definitely a time in which that was a huge deal, not just for you.
But I'm also, I think...
For that grouping, for those fans. And now, I agree with you, though. It didn't feel like it had the same buzz as I would have felt 15 years ago.
And maybe I'm in the minority. Some of this is just in general. I've told you guys on air, my sports fandom, I grew up in the area as you did as well. I went to KU, you guys know that. I cared way more about college sports prior to like 2015.
Realignment, you mean?
Prior to realignment, but also this town had not had a pro team other, you know, Sporting KC, I understand, won prior to 2015, but I'm talking baseball and football. We hadn't had a professional championship in my lifetime. So when seeing the Royals in the World Series in 14 and 15 changed everything for me as a sports fan, and obviously Patrick Mahomes' arrival changed everything for me as a sports fan, and obviously what we now, you know, you and I both do for a living now in sports talk radio. The Chiefs and the Royals are king in this town. And people are very passionate about college sports still. And I am still passionate about and very proud of the school I went to and everything like that. And I can't wait to check out the new football stadium. And there's nothing like Allen Fieldhouse. All that is true. But what you said about like ruining the afternoon, ruining the weekend stuff, like when I was much younger and all that.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen anymore. That's all.
But I just like... We grew up at a time in college where I remember MUKU. Again, a regular season December conference game between the two had juice. Juice. That if Missouri had won that game in Allen Fieldhouse, there would have been talk of it for a month. Years.
Sure.
Lore would have existed. Songs would have been sung about it by the campfire. And now I'm telling you, like, because that's when I know it's back. Let's say, hypothetically, because the better team this year, for the over-under, the predicted better team this year is Missouri. So, they're close, but for the sake of win totals or whatever, let's say Kansas goes into Columbia and beats Missouri. That's how you know how much juice it has. How big of a deal is it if Kansas goes into Missouri and beats them? And I think it's a big deal, but not big enough. Now, part of that's the early season part of it, right? It's just so early in the year, Gold, it's hard to, like, let it swing you one way or the other. But like the amount of hatred between the two, all these other things, like it just, that's the part of it. And like someone said,
the transfer portal
conference.
Yeah. And transfer portal stuff is kind of messed with that a little bit. I think that absolutely has played.
It's the biggest problem with college football. They're changing it into the NFL minor leagues. And you joked that I don't like the pageantry because we were joking about fight songs. They don't like the pageantry based on everything they've done. They've taken away the things that made college football, college football.
By the way, Kansas is a 6.5-point underdog in Columbia.
Okay.
KU plus the 6.5. Thank you very much. I might buy a half point. Get me to 7. Let's go. September 6th, I'm sorry, at 2:30 in the afternoon. I will be at a sports book still in Vegas when we're out at Circa. You will be just landing back in Kansas City, I think.
Yes. The game will be on for, fantasy football time. I'd imagine there's plenty of... But again, it's just, I don't know. I'm excited for it, but at the same time, we'll see how much juice it actually brings.
We found out yesterday that Kurt Warner is going to be part of the Chiefs Brazil broadcast. Of course, that opening game on Friday night in September is going to be on YouTube, Chiefs Chargers. And so Kurt Warner will be an analyst. I think that's great, right? I like Kurt Warner quite a bit in his role.
Yeah.
There's also a report out that Rich Eisen is the leading candidate for play-by-play on YouTube. And I think Rich Eisen as a studio host... As a radio host, is as good as it gets as a studio host, right? Like, very, very good. To me, if you still watch the national network pregame shows on a Sunday morning, The NFL Network one is easily the best. I think the other ones aren't all that great. So this is not an anti-Rich Eisen thing. I think as a play-by-play guy, though, you can do better. This is going to be frustrating to listen to. If, in fact, he actually gets...
Not a Rich Eisen play-by-play guy,
you should have,
huh?
96.5 The Fan and listen to Mitch Holthus during the game anyway, especially for the Friday night game in Brazil. Rich Eisen, when he does the London games, Cody, it's like so nonchalant and casual. Like, it's like, oh, whoops, I forgot that there's a run in the back. Like, I promise you.
When's the last time I watched a Rich Eisen
game? Friday night in Brazil, if it is actually Rich Eisen and Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner's great. Rich Eisen on play-by-play, you'll be like, hey, is he paying attention to the game? Like, did he just miss what happened? It's just like, whoa, and then there's that's an interception down the field, and there they go down the field. Like, it's not great. It's not great. So I'm bummed to hear that he might be doing the play-by-play of the YouTube broadcast.
I don't understand. Part of this is, like, I know you want a name because you're just getting these broadcasts first, but, like, why not just, like, let a young broadcaster who's, like, lower on the normalist, but you think does an excellent job. There was probably a time in which, you know, Noah Eagle wasn't the hottest name on the block, but was an incredible broadcaster. You know, why not just go further down the depth chart sometimes?
You're right. They do want a name, and that's probably why he's going to end up getting it. And it's one game, but you would think for the first, like the second game of the NFL season, Chiefs Chargers, it's YouTube's first big game or first game ever.
You think
I guess
you want like an amped up play-by-play.
I don't need Gus Johnson calling the game, but I'm just telling you guys, I promise you, you'll hear it now that I've mentioned it. That Friday, if you're not listening to Mitch, which you should be anyway, if Rich Eisen is calling the Chiefs-Chargers game, you're going to be like, it's so casual and nonchalant's the word I keep coming back to. When he calls, go listen to a clip of a play-by-play of a London game this past year, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't know if we have it in this system or anything, but it's not going to be
good.
Which
London game was it?
He's done a bunch of. He does a lot of their international games on NFL Network. I think he did the one in Germany too.
Those London games are real hit or miss for me on the watch category. I make sure my fantasy lineups are set, but like 8:30 in the morning, Jags Giants doesn't get me off the couch super fast a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, so it's might be 8:30 in the morning. Then I
it might be background noise. That might be why I wasn't paying close attention. You do not seem to be alone. There are multiple people on the text line and over on the YouTube and Twitch chats just saying like, yeah, it's pretty dull. Like. They said he does it like he does his podcast, you know?
He's not a play-by-play guy. I mean, that's...
So why do they keep going back to him? Because he's just employed by him and it's the same check?
He's got a good agent.
He does have a good agent. Does he like doing it?
And again, as a studio host, I think he's awesome.
He's incredible.
He's so, so good. And as a radio host, I think he does a great show, too. I think it's on Roku these days or something like that. But I saw that yesterday. I was like, darn it. And him and Kurt Warner work together all the time, so that's probably why they got this link together. I don't know if they have the same agent, but they've done broadcasts together.
I mean,
someone says maybe it'll be better because it's not a London game. Okay, I'll give you that. Hopefully that changes it for him. Hopefully he'll take it, you know, and have a little bit more fun with it and be locked in. Okay,
focused. Mm-hmm. Who's the team that has back to back international games this year?
Vikings. They're in Ireland against the Steelers, and then they go to London. I think.
I gotta say, that is the biggest boomer bust team in the entire league this year. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, because of McCarthy, just the Kevin O'Connell, though, man, is why people
weirdo
have faith.
Schedule, tough schedule, complete unknown at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man.
All right, up next, we will get to an upcoming road trip for the Royals and what looks like is happening with teams above them. A little check-in on the trade deadline, plus the trash of the day coming up here on Cody and Gold.